Yeah.
We've come to order.
Look at that. See? I turned it on.
We could hear you out there, so I think your mic was on.
Yeah.
Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Roll call for Wednesday, February 2nd. Barnard?
Here.
Bebout?
Here.
Burns?
Here.
Case?
Here.
Christensen?
Here.
Coe?
Here.
Cooper?
Here.
Dockstader?
Here.
Driscoll?
Here.
Emmerich?
Here.
Esquibel?
Here.
Geis?
Here.
Hastert? Hicks?
Here.
Hines?
Here.
Jennings?
Here.
Johnson?
Here.
Landon?
Here.
Martin?
Here.
Meyer? Nicholas? Nutting?
Here.
Perkins?
Here.
Peterson?
Here.
Ross?
Here.
Rothfuss?
Here.
Schiffer?
Here.
Scott? Von Platern? President Anderson?
Here.
Hastert?
Here.
Scott?
Scott here.
Meyer? Nickel? Von Platern?
Here.
30 present.
Prayer by Reverend Gilbert.
I was tempted this morning to think of something about the groundhog, but the best that I could come up with was, what's the weather going to be if the groundhog is snowed in and can't get out of its burrow? But I would rather than think of a groundhog, pray to a good God. So let us pray. Our Heavenly Father, we believe your love and grace reaches every human heart. You are present with persons far from us and those near to us. Today we hold in prayer Senators Enzi and Barrasso and Representative Loomis. We hold in our prayer Secretary Maxfield, Auditor Cloud, Treasurer Meyer, Superintendent Hill, and Governor Meade. We are mindful of our state representatives meeting on this same floor. Our prayer is sufficiently large to include all the support staff, and we would be amiss if our prayer did not include all those near and dear to our own personal hearts. Look favorably upon these public servants and our loved ones, and strengthen them in body, mind, and soul with your sufficient grace and abundant love. While we do not march in lockstep, yet we all are linked together, striving for the good of Wyoming and all her citizens. You, O Lord, have told us what is good and what is required of us, but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with our God. So shall we strive to do. Amen.
Please join me in the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the reading clerk please read the Journal Committee report?
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February the 1st, 2011, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Nutting, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, that report is adopted. We have no doctor for the day, nor do we have a nurse for the day. On this day in Wyoming history, the Wyoming Supreme Court decided common law marriage was invalid. I had a comment today in regard to Groundhog Day, and it was simply to say I think all the prairie dogs came out to recognize their cousins on this day, decided it was too cold and went back to bed. Messages from the House.
February the 1st, 2011. From the House of Representatives, message number 189. Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report failing the bill listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill 34, Sales and Use Tax Distributions. Ayes 22, noes 37, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Introduction, reading, and reference of bills. House Bill 120, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 120, public meeting, sponsored by Representative Edmonds. Passed an act relating to public meetings. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 58, noes 2.
House Bill 120 has been referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 121, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 121, Public Records, an act relating to public records, sponsored by Representative Edmonds. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 54, noes 6.
House Bill 121 has been referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 122, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 122, No Duty to Retreat, an act relating to crimes and offenses, sponsored by Representative Qualberg. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 57, noes 3.
House Bill 122 has been referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 182, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 182, Student Assessment Measures, an act relating to education, sponsored by Representative Throne. Passed the House on third reading. Ayes 56, noes 2, excused 2.
House Bill 182 has been referred to Committee Number 4, Education. House Bill 127, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 127, School Finance Recalibration, an act relating to school finances, sponsored by the School Finance Committee. Pass the House on third reading in an amended form. Ayes 53, noes 7.
House Bill 127 has been referred to Committee Number 4, Education. House Bill 74, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 74, Validity of Marriage, an act relating to marriage, sponsored by Representative Peterson. Pass the House on third reading in an amended form. Ayes 32, 20, noes 27, excused 1.
House Bill 74 has been referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. House Joint Resolution 6, first reading of the House Joint Resolution.
House Joint Resolution 6, Private Property Protection, a joint resolution requesting Congress to refrain from enacting any laws which restrict private property rights in violation of the United States Constitution. Sponsored by Representative Hunt. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2.
House Joint Resolution 6 has been referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. House Bill 49, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 49, Primary Care Support Program, an act relating to public health, sponsored by the Labor Committee. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 47, noes 11, excused 2.
House Bill 49 has been assigned to Committee Number 10, Labor. House Bill 35, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 35, Health Care Choice and Protection Act, and Act Relating to a Health Care Choice and Protection Act, sponsored by Representative Brechtel. Pass the House on third reading in an amended form, ayes 44, noes 14, excuse 2.
House Bill 35 has been referred to Committee Number 10, Labor. Reports from standing committees.
February the 1st, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 2, Appropriation, to whom was referred Senate File 103, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Flatern, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 2nd, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 57, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, and Hicks, Senator Geis, Chairman. February the 2nd, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 8, Engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Driscoll, Geis, and Hicks. No, Senator Emmerich, Senator Geis, Chairman. February the 2nd, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 18, Engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, and Hicks, Senator Geis, Chairman. February the 2nd, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 5, Agricultural, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 15, Engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, and Hicks, Senator Geis, Chairman. Mr. President, February the 2nd, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 19, Engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins, Senator Perkins, Chairman. February the 2nd, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 68, Engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins, Senator Perkins, Chairman. February the 2nd, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 105, Engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins, Senator Perkins, Chairman.
Bills on second reading. Senate File 95, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 95, Legislative Committee Membership, sponsored by Senator Meyer.
There are no amendments. Senate File 95, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senator Hastert. Request is that Senate File 132 be laid back until second reading tomorrow. Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 134, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 134, Lien, sponsored by Senator Perkins.
There is an amendment, and it is the BBOT amendment. I would ask that the reading clerk read in that amendment at this time.
Senate File 134, second reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 1.
Senator Bebout, would you like to move that amendment and speak to it, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 134. Members of the Senate, we had some good discussion yesterday about lien laws. If you look at your bill on page 3, it talks about some language that would prohibit a contractor from being able to file a lien if, in fact, he did not notify the subcontractors or materialmen. Mr. President, what this amendment does is strikes that language, and if you'll recall the discussion yesterday, I think you put the contractor in a precarious position that not only will he not be able to file the lien, but also that the protection afforded to his subcontractors and materialmen may be, in fact, breached because since he could not file the lien, their access to him would be taken away as well. I think it's a good idea, and I think we should leave the existing law the way it is.
Questions, comments, Senator Perkins?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman. On and neither for or against the amendment, just by way of explanation, just so you know, when we talked about yesterday the effective date and the delay in the effective date, and the purpose of that was to go out and allow some opportunity for comment. And I can tell you that I had two occasions in front of fairly large groups to present what we did with liens last year. One of those was to a conference of contractors. Another one was to about probably close to 150, 200 members of the bar at the state bar convention last year. And out of that, this bill contains the three comments that we received back out of those two things. Whether or not this is good policy or not, you just need to decide. I brought to you each of the concerns that have been brought to me by those groups. In doing that, there was not any particular strong feeling or concern. These were issues that are and perceived weaknesses or issues they thought need to be addressed. I can also tell you in committee that we had we didn't receive any opposition to this. So this is vote this up or vote this down on how you think it would be good. I just wanted the body to know that where this came from and the impetus behind it. Thank you, Mr. President.
Still on the amendment, any comments? Seeing none, the question before us is in regard to second reading amendment number 1 to House Senate File 134. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
That amendment has passed. We're back on the bill, seeing no further amendments. Senate File 134, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 137, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 137, Ignition Interlock Devices, an act relating to the operation of motor vehicles, sponsored by Senator Perkins.
There are no amendments. Seeing no discussion, Senate File 137, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 138, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 138, Child Custody Orders Abandonments, sponsored by Senator Perkins.
There are no amendments. Senate File 138, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate Joint Resolution Number 1, second reading of the Senate Joint Resolution.
Senate Joint Resolution 1, Right to Hunt, Fish, and Trap, sponsored by Senator Hicks.
There are some amendments. The first amendment is the Scott Amendment. I'd ask that the reading clerk read that amendment in at this time.
Senate Joint Resolution 1, second reading amendment number 1, page 2, line 9.
Senator Scott, would you like to move and just talk about the amendments, please?
Mr. President, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, what this amendment does is it comes in if you have the informally engrossed version, it comes in and puts a period after wildlife, so it would read the state subject to regulation prescribed by law, does not create a right trespass on private property, diminish other private rights, or alter the duty of the state to manage wildlife. That would be the language that would remain. The language that would come out is in such a manner that ensures adequate populations and sustained use to preserve Wyoming's hunting, fishing, and trapping heritage. So, Mr. President, what we're taking out almost amounts to a purpose clause. We're taking out the stuff that talks about the purpose of the state's duty to manage wildlife. What's important that remain in the amendment is that we aren't endangering the state's duty to manage its wildlife. You know, all the game and fish regulations, when you can hunt and how many animals can be taken, all that sort of thing is protected. But the purposes are left then open if this amendment passes. And I think that's wise, Mr. President, because those purpose things, they don't add anything to the state's ability to manage the wildlife, but they sure in heck put you at risk of some unintended consequences you didn't expect when they have to do some management for reasons that, safety reasons, for reasons that are relating to avoiding endangered species problems and all those other considerations that come into play. So, Mr. President, that's the long and the short of the amendment, and we'd be happy to answer any questions on it, urge adoption.
Questions of the sponsor? Senator Hicks?
Mr. Chairman, I would acknowledge this as a friendly amendment to the bill.
Thank you, Senator Hicks. Other comments or questions? Question before us is in regard to second reading amendment number 1 to Senate Joint Resolution number 1. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has carried, has passed. There is a second amendment. That is the Landon Amendment. I'd ask that the reading clerk read that amendment in at this time.
Senate Joint Resolution 1, second reading amendment number 2, page 1, line 3.
Senator Landon, would you like to move and address the amendment, please?
Thank you. Mr. President, I would move second reading amendment number 2 to Senate Joint Resolution 1 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. After visiting last evening with the bill's sponsor, we felt like this language better reflected what the intent of the resolution was. I think it cleans it up, and I would just ask for your favorable consideration. Thanks.
Comments or questions regarding the Landon Amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment, second reading amendment number 2 to Senate Joint Resolution number 1 has passed. We are back on the bill, or back on the resolution. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Senate Joint Resolution number 1, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Mr. Majority Floridator, do we have a consent list for third reading?
Mr. President, we do have a consent list, and the consent list for today is as follows. Senate File 91, Wildlife, Livestock, Disease, Research, Partnership, Funding. Senate File 93, Dietetics, Licensure. Senate File 106, School Finance, Local Resources. Senate File 117, Wyoming Reclamation and Restoration Center. And Senate File 119, Real Estate Brokers and Salesmen Revisions 2.
Would anyone like any of these removed from the consent list? Seeing none, then having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 91, Senate File 93, Senate File 106, Senate File 117, Senate File 119. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting? Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer? Anderson?
Aye.
On the consent list, 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 91, are there any changes? Emmerich, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 91, 28 ayes, 2 noes. Senate File 93, are there any changes? Burns, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing.
Perkins, aye to no.
Nicholas, aye to no. Bebout, aye to no. Coe, aye to no. Dockstetter, aye to no. Schiffer, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 93. 22 ayes, 8 noes. Senate File 106, are there any changes?
Aye to no.
Von Flateren, aye to no.
Landon, aye to no.
Landon, aye to no.
Bebout,
aye to no.
Geis,
aye to no.
Hines,
aye to no.
Dockstetter,
aye to no. Emmerich, aye to no. Johnson, aye to no. Martin, aye to no. Christensen, aye to no. Esquibel, aye to no. Driscoll, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 106, 17 ayes, 13 noes. Senate File 117, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 117, 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 119, are there any changes?
Scott, no.
Scott, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 119, 28 ayes, 2 noes.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 91, Senate File 93, Senate File 106, Senate File 117, Senate File 119 have passed the Senate. Other bills on third reading. Senate File 85, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 85, Game and Fish Violation Penalties and Act Relating to Game and Fish, sponsored by Senator Burns, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There is an amendment, several The First Amendment is the Rothfuss Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in that amendment at this time?
Senate File 85, Third Reading Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 1.
Senator Rothfuss, would you like to move this amendment and speak to it, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to move Third Reading Amendment Number 1 on Senate File 85. This is a very simple amendment that I would give for consideration to the body. We had some discussion in the first reading or the Committee of the Whole regarding whether or not this should take effect as a felony on the second offense or the third offense. And this amendment simply shifts it from a second offense felony to a third offense felony without changing any of the other provisions, Mr. President. It's no more complicated than that. I feel like two strikes is probably not necessarily enough before you get the felony. So the third strike being out in this instance is what I'm looking at on this particular amendment. I can tell you just as a bit of background that the Game Wardens Association is not particularly supportive of this. They feel like it would decrease their abilities, but I still think that based on what we heard in testimony and what we heard in the discussion and the debate, it would be better if we had the third possibility to limit any possibility of accidental or unintended applications of this law. So with that, Mr. President, I would urge adoption of the First Amendment on third reading for Senate File 85, Mr. President.
Other comments or questions? Senator Driscoll.
Speaking on and against it, I simply will tell you I think there's a better way to fix this. Thank you.
Other commentary?
I did.
Question before us is in regard to Third Reading Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 85. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
That amendment has passed. There is a second amendment being the Perkins Amendment. I'd ask that the reading clerk read that amendment in at this time.
Senate File 85, Third Reading Amendment Number 2, page 1, line 4.
Senator Perkins, would you like to move and address this amendment, please?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. I move Third Reading Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 85 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. This is another change. Ultimately, when you look at this, the testimony that I believe that we heard from the good chairman of TRW was that this was a misdemeanor, and having been that misdemeanor was a problem, and that ultimately we end up being maybe the one that's the most attractant. If you look at the other issues, the other states that have done this, most of those are a felony somewhere between 1 year up to 10 years. I'm looking at this from two directions. One is simply that if it's a felony, regardless of the time period, they lose their right to they lose their civil rights, including the right to bear firearms. And under federal law, when you have that felony, it also you lose the right to even like one-shot muzzlers and things that might be available under state law, even lose the right to bear certain weapons. So you're about reduced to archery. The other thing is I'm sorry, but I don't want to pay for the room and board for somebody for 10 years for doing this violation. Let's take their civil rights. Let's remove their hunting privileges. But ultimately we have the same issue regardless of whether it's drunk driving, whether it's taking of game animals. There are just certain individuals who are not going to obey the law. And if we start down this road, are we just going to warehouse those individuals who can't get the message? And if we do it here, we better start building more prisons to house the folks that won't get the message on DUI or game violations or beating spouses or whatever it is. We better start building bigger and more prisons. The other issue also was that that this amendment addresses. First, want to reduce the felony, the sentence from 10 years to 2 years, left a felony, but also under our existing statutes in 68101, use of a firearm while committing a felony, simply says a person who uses a firearm while committing a felony shall be imprisoned for not more than 10 years. This is obviously now a felony, so if you use a firearm in the commission of this, you would get not only the 2 years or even the 10 years if this amendment were to fail, you would get another. You could get another 10 years on top of that. And so, and subsection B says this section doesn't apply those felonies where the element of the crime, is the use of a possession of a deadly weapon. While it may be implicit that you have to have a deadly weapon to kill an animal, it's not an element of the crime. It's simply that you take that animal out of season without a license. So I wanted to make sure that we ended up, I don't think it was intended. I think that statute was intended for crimes typically against people, and this didn't seem to fall into that. So that's what this amendment does, Mr. President, and I ask for your favorable vote.
Other comments? Question before us is in regard to third reading amendment number two, Senate file 85. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. That brings us to the third amendment. This is the Driscoll amendment. I'd ask that the reading clerk read that amendment in at this time.
Senate file 85, third reading amendment number three, page 2, line 12.
Senator Driscoll, would you like to move this amendment and speak to it at this time, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. Regarding third reading amendment number three to Senate file 85, this amendment speaks directly to what we talked about both in committee and quite a bit yesterday, is what happens in specific instances when you have multiple violations happen at the same time and you can get into a instant felony situation, particularly with youth and people that...
Yes. I believe you're correct. Senator Driscoll, would you please move this amendment?
Yes, I would move the amendment passed.
All right. Senator Driscoll has moved the amendment, so go ahead, Senator Driscoll.
Apologize for that. At any rate, it just deals with a case so you're not going to create an instant felon on youthful indiscretions or whatever. Go out, shoot two or three antelope in a day. Instantly you're charged with a felony because you've got three counts in one day. This merely moves it to where the offenses happen to happen on different occasions in order for it to be charged a felony. And it's something that I think strengthens the bill really well for inadvertent action to turn someone into a felon.
Senator Cole.
Typo error in this amendment, if anybody's okay. Reading it like I am. It says for the purposes, I think that can be corrected at the desk.
I believe that's a pretty obvious error, and I think that could probably be corrected by staff, but we appreciate you catching that and calling it to our attention. Other comments, Senator Christensen?
Mr. President, speaking on for the amendment, the examples and the conversation that we had in committee and also on the floor, I think the intent of this is to address those habitual of people who come back time after time and take the game. I like this amendment in that it does really address that those someone who may make a mistake, and when we talk about a mistake, not the number of mistakes in a single day, but a one-time occurrence, and not something that comes back the next week and the week after that or the year after that and makes it, you know. So I think this amendment does address that and allows for that one-time consideration.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And when the sponsor takes his second, I guess I'd like an... The problem I have with this amendment, Mr. Chairman, it seems to me I could get a 2-for or 3-for-1 on this one. And ultimately, when you come down to the youthful indiscretions, there are other ample charges that can be charged and pled down that don't rise to this level for those youthful indiscretions. And while I understand that we've now made it a third offense, we've now made a third crime as felony as the bill that we've passed. With this one now, you're actually going out there. If you might as well shoot two or three, shoot one now. And so it seems to me that this one goes too far the other direction. And for that reason, I think I'm a no vote on this one. Thank you.
Okay, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, speaking on and for this amendment, I think this is a sensible way to start taming our rush to create new felonies all over the place. I think you do have a circumstance where, and they might not be necessarily youthful, but people will make mistakes. You get an overzealous prosecutor. I think we're better off fixing the law. It's still a significant crime, you know, high misdemeanor. So you may well get several misdemeanor convictions if you go out and do several of these in one day. But I think it's a wise step to tame this one down. I would urge adoption of the amendment.
Other commentary here? Questions? Senator Driscoll, would you like to... Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see you there. Senator Jennings.
Wait until I'm done to say whether you're sorry, Mr. President. In the bill, it already says with the intent. So as you go out and if you're one of these serial killers of big game and stuff, it already says it in the statute that we're trying to pass with the intent. Now, I'm not going to speak against or for this amendment, but we should take into consideration that a youthful frolic out in the prairie shooting antelope all day long, that is intent. But is it intent for what this law is? So remember, it is with intent, is what we're telling everybody. I kind of think that this amendment may water that intent down just because you go out and have fun one day.
Now, Senator Driscoll.
That's a great point, except that it is always intent. When you got a firearm in your hand and you're shooting something, there's always intent. And if I'm a prosecutor, I'm going to show intent every time. And this really, really changes how severe it can run into. And these instances happen, not rarely, but more often than you would think. And the ability is there to deal with. If you've done three times of it, you're going to have three high misdemeanors. You're going to lose your right to hunt. It's severe as heck on kids regardless. And it's absolutely tragic back to felons for us to create another 10 or 15 felons a year in Wyoming. And there's a very real chance you can do that. A felony for a youthful type person to start out your first time on the day that you did a stupid thing to be a felon for the rest of your life is unconscionable for us to do that.
You ready for the question? Question being called, third reading amendment number 3 to Senate file 85. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
That amendment has passed. We are back on the bill. Senate file 85. Having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
No.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Meyer? Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Slatern?
No.
President Anderson?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 21 ayes, 9 noes.
Senate File 85, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 85 has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business for considerations of bills on general file.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion is carried. Senator Perkins, would you like to approach the desk, please?
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate Joint Resolution 7. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate Joint Resolution 7, Bark Beetle Mitigation, a joint resolution requesting Congress, state, and local authorities to take action to mitigate damages caused by bark beetles and to prevent further damage and epidemics. Sponsored by Senator Dockstader. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, and Hicks. Senator Geis, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Geis?
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I move that Senate file Joint Resolution Number 7 do pass, and I'd also like to move the Standing Committee amendments.
Senate Joint Resolution 7, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 11.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 on SJ 7, and I'll yield the floor to Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Senator Guy. Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll give you just a brief little introduction here and then go through the bill and the amendment at the same time, if that pleases the chair. So we've watched our forests here in Wyoming continue to deteriorate with this beetle kill. Many of our local state leaders, our federal officials, we've tried to find a solution. I commend the chair of Agriculture for holding public meetings in the last two legislative sessions as we looked at the situation. You've received a handout yesterday, members of the Senate, and I hope it didn't get lost in the shuffle. It shows just the extent of the beetle kill around the state of Wyoming. Mountain pine beetle, spruce beetle, Douglas fir beetle, your choice. Quite an extensive destruction picture there as you look at that. Now, out on our side of the state, on the far west, we've had numerous discussions involving our county officials, our state officials, our governor, our federal agencies, legislators, congressional representatives. One of our most interesting ones came when we brought in the Interior Secretary, Undersecretary of the Interior, into our county seat there in Kemmer. And he and the governor just completed a flyover of a couple of the major forests in the state of Wyoming. And as they came in, they looked at one area that's in particularly bad shape, a Ham's Fork, 65% dead there near the South Lincoln area, well on its way to 90% loss. At our latest meeting in Kemmer, just before I came to Cheyenne for the session, we pulled representatives from the Forest Service together, representatives from industry, our county officials, and we really took a hard look at what we could be doing, and we felt like we were getting a little progress going. We need to continue this, members of the Senate. We need to continue to work on this, bringing the right parties together to find a solution. And this document, Senate Joint Resolution 7, just helps us, provide us with the assistance we need. And if it's with the permission of the chair, I'll just go over the resolution and the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Proceed, Mr. Senator Dockstader.
I'll just give you the highlights, members of the Senate, and then note the amendments as we come to those points. First of all, the resolution takes action to mitigate damages caused by the bark beetles, recognizes that the beetles are causing an epidemic. It's a significant threat. And then specific amendment on page 1, line 11, we need to put a 3 in front of that 1. It's actually 3.1 million acres. And continuing on through the whereases, epidemic beetles, this epidemic is killing the trees, blocking roadways, threatening structures and other property. It's significantly causing damage in terms of economic damage and environmental damage. We could have wildfires, destroy wildlife habitat, causes problems with water and air quality, causes problems with the loss of tourism and outfitting, and eventually causing staggering costs and remediation. And then the next section, or actually to the third paragraph on page 2, this acknowledges that work has already started. We've been holding these meetings, we've been holding the public hearings, and we acknowledge that in that part of the resolution, working together to address the problem there. Additional remediation efforts are necessary to minimize the impacts of this epidemic. So we need to continue to work on this to assure Wyoming's
environmental, and economic prosperity. Now to the sections on page 3. Wyoming legislature calls for the right agencies to come together and support heightened levels and efforts to remediate the damages. On page 3, line 3 is our second amendment. After the word damages, we insert and allow for the timely harvest of dead trees. This amendment came in committee. It's favorable to what we've been working with. As we talk to industry, they're saying we need to know that we have some sustainable harvest there to step in and start working on this. They're interested in it, but we need to have the parties working together to bring that all into fruition. In section 2, legislature calls on Congress in conjunction with all the appropriate state and local governments to engage in cooperative efforts to remediate, minimize the impacts of the bark beetle epidemic. We need short and long-range planning. We need to limit present and future spread of the epidemic, and limit the impacts, the costs associated with the epidemic. Section 3, we ask that we transmit copies to the right authorities, and I know that's where that's been a concern, and I've heard the discussion on the floor before in regards to resolutions. I'm willing to take this resolution and hand deliver it to our congressional delegation. And a friendly amendment and a good advice from a wise one in committee said we need to add a section 4, and that's where the final amendment comes in. That would actually be on section 4 in your amendment handout. The President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House transmit a copy of this resolution to the Council of State Governments West, that's CSG West, as the official position of the Wyoming legislature. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would ask for your favorable consideration of both these pieces of legislation. We've worked hard on it over the last few years. We need to continue working hard on it, and we need this resolution to help us in our efforts as we sit down with all the parties at the table, try to find a solution, and try to involve everyone to essentially work with the product that's out there, but it's being destroyed right around us, and we appreciate your help in getting this done. Ask for your favorable consideration.
Thank you, Senator Dockstader. We're on the amendment. Discussion? Question on the amendment? All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate Joint Resolution 7, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Bebout.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. And members of the Senate, very briefly, and in support of this amendment, I can remember in Wyoming in the late 70s and early 80s where we had 10 to 15 operating lumber mills in this state. And the number of people employed was somewhere between 3,000 and 4,000. These were good jobs, and we were marketing and harvesting a viable product in our state. And then in the late 70s or mid-70s, it started and carried over in the 80s, where a conscious decision was made by the Forest Service to just start arbitrarily, in my opinion, shutting off this whole industry. And if you fast forward and look to where we are today, I think there's maybe one or two lumber mills in our entire state that are even up and operating. And what's happened is not only do we have the loss of jobs, the loss of that economic opportunity for our state, but look at our forests. And if you've driven around Wyoming and if you looked at the Rockies, you can really see areas where this decision was made, and you can talk about some kind of external pressure put on by certain groups or whatever you would want to do. But if you look at Wyoming, and there was a graph pointed out to you, and you can look at the northwestern part of the state, you can see all the red, and of course that's where the biggest infestation is, and then in the southern part of our state, down around southern Carbon County and Bags. But then you look it up in the north-central part of our state, and up in Sheridan County and Johnson County, and then over in the Black Hills, there's not as many. I would submit to you that the Forest Service and the management of those forests was truly the way it should have been, is to allow responsible harvesting of our forests, to allow those mills to operate, and to try to control the beetles. I think that this mismanagement of our forests, it hasn't totally caused the situation that we have, but it sure has contributed to that. And if you fly around our state and you look at some of the areas where you do, it's red everywhere, if you happen to see some green, it's probably a clear cut. And if you're hunting and you actually, where you want to go hunt, you can't go through the red part of the forest because there's so much fallen timber. So you go to, if you're lucky enough, an area where there's a clear cut. And so, members of the Senate, the thing that I think we need to do is what's done is done. And it's been a total disservice to the West and Wyoming what's happened to our forests. But let's at least look forward and try to stop what may happen. Now, we don't want the Bighorn National Forest or the Black Hills Forest to turn into the other kinds of forests we have in our state. I think this resolution goes a long way to doing that. We need to continue once again, members of the Senate, to let the people in Washington know that we ought to be able to have some input on what happens in our state. We're not going to rely on bureaucrats to dictate and tell us what to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bebout. Senator Cooper.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just say a few words on this Senate joint resolution. As you can see, this map that's been handed out to you and the red areas all over this map, and you can see the devastation that this beetle infestation has caused to our state. And the reason it all happened, members of the Senate, is because we had a lack of interest, a lack of concern, and a lack of policy on behalf of our national land management teams to go out and do something about that. The attitude and the policy that was taken over the years has been, let's just wait and see. Well, let me tell you, members of the Senate, we've waited and we've seen, and now we can see the devastation it has caused to this wonderful state of ours. Those of us who live in the green hills of this state, there were beautiful spreads of emerald green for miles, now see red. It's all because of these beetles. It's all because of the lack of management on behalf of some of these groups. We need to have this joint resolution, I feel, to kind of let these people know of the concerns we have and that something needs to be done. Over 50% of the forest where I live, the Bridger-Teton National Forest, is completely either been devastated by these beetles or is on the way of being devastated. Now, this is the forest that goes clear up and borders on Grand Teton National Park in Yellowstone. Now, those are wonderful, wonderful heritage that we have in those forests, in the parks up there. And now it's going to the possibility of take over those areas, too, and has actually started, too. So we would like to send this resolution, as the good senator from Star Valley said, to our congressional delegation to make sure these people in these agencies, these national land management agencies, know of our feelings about this situation and how much it is affected our lives here in Wyoming. One more thing it does. There's people that say, oh, let it naturally happen. Well, it's naturally happened now is we've loaded up our streams. We've destroyed our watersheds. You know, the forest out there, when it's alive, retains the water, keeps the moisture in the soil. Now we have streams that are totally loaded up with TMDL where we can't hardly control them anymore. And they've actually destroyed many of our streams, too, because of this devastation. I'd ask your favorable consideration on this bill.
Thank you, Senator Cooper. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a little bit of a curiosity on what this bill is actually intending to have happen. You know, there is some chance, I guess, that Congress or the federal agencies will actually look at this, read it, and then decide they want to act on it. And what I'm concerned about is if that all does happen, are we going to be back here in a year setting up a fund to provide the necessary money that we need to file some lawsuits against the federal government to stop whatever it is that the federal government does to respond to this request for federal involvement. You know, have we really thought through what we're requesting here? I can see asking for money, but based on what I've heard on a lot of other issues that we've been talking about recently, is this body really, really asking Congress and the federal agencies to step in and help? Is that actually what you want? All right, I see some nods over there. So apparently on this one, we want the government intervention. On everything else, we want them to stay the heck back. All right? I'm all right with that, as long as we know what we're talking about here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
As long as we're clear, Senator Rothfuss. Senator Schiffer, do you have a clarification to add to this discussion?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I've got to lead the lambs out of the forest before the wolves get them. Mr. Chairman, there are some other alternatives, and let me just suggest one. When CSG West met in where were we?
September.
Sun Valley. Yeah, that's where we were. We had a long discussion, particularly with our neighbor to the south, and understand they've been hurt by this just as we have. And that state is looking at some programs to develop what basically is an industry that harvests this stuff. And that sounds easy to do. It's very difficult. You're trying to build an industry around a bunch of dead trees that are going to fall over and all that stuff. But it seems to me that there's also a call to action here to say, let's use our minds, let's be creative, let's see what we can do using each other and using the innovation and all that those good things. If we can't do something with these forests that produce jobs, that produce industry, but also produce a healthy landscape. And I think they're out there. This isn't just an automatic. It's okay if they want to write a check, you know, we'll spend it. But I think there's more to this than just saying send federal dollars. I think in part of it is let's work cooperatively and manage the land smarter and better and see if there isn't a good solution to this beetle problem.
Thanks, Senator Schiffer. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, and speaking for and in favor of this resolution, as a little background information, why this is important right now, and I had an opportunity to visit with Representative Loomis when she was here, and to a certain degree on some of these issues, but there's not going to be any money, more money out there for the Forest Service. But one of the things right now, my contacts back in Washington, D.C., and then here in the state of Wyoming, the funding for the Forest Service is going to become more competitive amongst the forest, and one of the programs that they've got out there right now is called the Collaborative Forest Landscape Restoration Program. But what that does is it's going to set us up as competing with Arizona, New Mexico, Montana, and every national forest in the United States, and these are all predicated on a level of collaboration. And that collaboration is going to come from the local governments, those local people living in and near these forests. So what this resolution does also sets up for our congressional delegation to be able to go back and say we want to continue to see these CLFRs move forward. Wyoming is serious about it. We passed a resolution, and we're going to move forward with these collaborative efforts. And I'll tell you, everywhere except for within Region 2, within the Forest Service, which is Wyoming primarily, a little bit of Colorado, most of Colorado, is the only place that this currently isn't happening in the United States. One of the other things I found out last night, I was talking to our state forester, and he indicated to me that a couple of years ago, Senator Barrasso had brought a bill called the Good Neighbor Act. And basically what that would do was would allow the state forestry division to administer timber sales on national forest land. And he indicated to me that Senator Barrasso is intending to potentially bring this back again this session. What this resolution speaks to that very issue, local, federal partnerships and involvement. So this resolution speaks to the direction that I think the Forest Service is going to go and the direction Congress is going to take them. We need to support the efforts of our congressional delegation. And I think this resolution does that. I would like to say there's one other thing that I think is being missed in this whole discussion, and we had the Forest Service from Region 2 testify before the Joint Ag Committee the first week of session, and one of the things that come up, one of the implications of what's going on out there right now is going to have huge consequences to the counties, to the local governments, and the individual property owners, because this is my good senator behind me here indicated, it's changing the hydrology on a landscape scale. Last year in the Platte River, we had some pretty high snowpacks, but we had the highest flows we've ever recorded, and that is directly attributed to the beetle kill. But what's that mean to us as a state and how we're going to address this issue? We had flooding in towns that had never experienced flooding with 120% of normal snowpack. 3 years in a row, we've had flooding in the town of Bags. We're not having 200% normal like we had in the early 80s. So it's driving up significant costs for water treatment plants, county roads and bridges, individual irrigation infrastructure, diversion structures, head gates, and massive loss of private property associated with this. So this is a big problem, and it transpires and affects more than just the Forest Service. Everybody downstream is going to be impacted at one point or another. So I do think this is a good resolution, It sends a message that we're serious about this and coordinates with our congressional delegates.
Thank you, Senator Hicks. For the discussion, are we ready for the question? No, we're not. Senator Rockstader.
Just briefly thanking those who made the comments. Much time and effort has gone into this, much thought. To assure the good senator that a lot of work has gone into this. We'll continue to work with this, and I just ask the body to have this, allow me to have this in hand to continue that work.
Thanks, Senator Dockstader. Are we ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, they do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate Joint Resolution 7, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate Joint Resolution 7 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 104. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 104, Meningococcal Vaccination, an act relating to mandatory immunization of children, sponsored by Senator Landon. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Dockstader, Martin, Nutting, Schiffer, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. It was reassigned to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do not pass. Aye, Senators Myers, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Platen. No, Senator Hastert. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Thank you for the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 104 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
Will the reading clerk please read the amendment?
Senate File 104, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1. Line 5.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. Mr. Chairman, Standing Committee Amendment does two things. On page 2, line 6, and on page 3, line 1, we substitute the word multivalent for quadrivalent. What's going on here is these vaccines against the meningococcal vaccination. The vaccine, it has currently four strains in it, so it's the quadrivalent. That's current state of the art, but they're making progress all the time, Mr. Chairman, and getting more strains into these vaccines. And so if we change the language to multivalent, our statutes don't become out of date. So that's well worth doing. The second thing it does is it became quite apparent from the testimony in committee that the reason this hasn't happened already is it costs more money than the health department has in the budget, and they would need to have an additional appropriation to get it done. So if you're going to do what the bill calls for, you've got to have the appropriation in it. It'll be part of their standard budget. So this is an expansion in what we're doing. But in order to have a working bill, as a practical matter, you've got to put the appropriation in. And I think that was reflected in the action in committee number 2. So I would urge the Senate to adopt the standing committee amendment, and then you can debate whether or not it's worth doing it at all when you debate the bill.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Senator Scott, are you finished for now?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're on the amendment. Senator Bebout.
Mr. Chairman, I would just ask if you divide the amendment, the first division would be 1 through 7, the second would be 8 through 25.
So division number 1 would be lines 1 through 7, and division 2 would be the remainder of the amendment.
And, Mr. Chairman, also you take out 1 and 2 in the second division.
I'm sorry, can you say that again for me? You lost me.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the first part of the amendment would be lines 3 through 7. Second division would be lines 1 and 2 and 10 through 25.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, it would appear to me that that division works.
Chair finds that the amendment is divisible as determined, but hang on to that. Yes. What we've got is Division 1 consists of lines 3 through 7, and Division 2 consists of lines 1 and 2 and lines 8 through 25. Is that correct? Okay. Yes, we find that's divisible, so we're on. Which one do you wish to take first, Senator Bebout?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I've got no problem with the first division, and unless there is one, I just call for the question on that.
Okay. There are discussion on the first division, which is lines 3 through 7 of the Standing Committee Amendment. Ready for the question? All those in favor of Division 1 of the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 104, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Division 1 is passed. We're on Division 2. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill is a good bill. I'm just curious to hear from maybe the sponsor or member of the Appropriation Committee. You know, it's not like the Department of Health doesn't have a substantial budget, and it really there's the need to find $335,000 of additional appropriation in it, and some discussion about that in general.
Thank you, Senator Bebout. We'll go to Senator Landon, and then, well, excuse me, since it's Ron, I'm going to defer, and we're going to go back to Senator Nicholas, chairman of the Appropriations Committee first, then we'll come back to Senator Landon. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, the Appropriations Committee, when they receive a bill on a re-referral, one of the motions that we can, if we all vote no on the bill, what we do is change the vote to an affirmative and a recommendation of do not pass. And that was the recommendation of the bill. So I intend to wait and talk about the bill. With respect to this amendment, and we're going to start learning the budget process here as now we're going to start gearing up. You have to remember that we are in the second year. We're now funding for the second year of the biennium. Every dollar you vote now would be like asking for twice that much if we were at the beginning of the biennium. So this appropriation of $335,000 is not a full implementation of the cost of this bill. It is a partial implementation. And we could talk about that later, but it takes at least this much money to run this new program. And if when you biennialize the amount, that is, you accommodate for a biennium's worth of funding, it has to be doubled. So if you vote on this bill through and it takes $335,000, for the next biennium, it's going to cost us $670,000. That's the cost. The reason this program costs is because when we require these immunizations as part of the mandatory immunizations, then we provide it by the state. We provide it to all Medicaid recipients and certain other folks that are in certain income brackets. We purchase the vaccinations, and that's pretty much for everyone. When you sent your children to go get your shots, you'll recall you paid the cost for the nurse for your DPT shots, but the state of Wyoming paid for the cost of the vaccinations. And, you know, when you think, hey, that was pretty cool, I just went down and paid $30 for a $120 booster shot, somebody paid for that. The state of Wyoming paid for it. So in this respect, we believe that the Standing Committee, did the right thing. The Standing Committee recognized that if you want to vote for this bill, there's a cost. And you could say, well, the Department of Health has a billion-dollar budget. They can find it. Folks, every dollar in there has that budget has a constituency and a purpose. It was all appropriated. And if you require them to do something they're not presently doing it and say, I know you can go find the money somewhere, the answer is they have to go to another program that we've already funded to cut it out. But more than that, it's not an acknowledgement that what we do, what we vote on, has an expense and a cost. And it's not good enough to say, well, I'm not going to worry about the cost. I think they can absorb the cost in their large budget. Because they don't. They come back and they increase the budget later on. So this is the cost of the program. It's not a full implementation, but it does begin to meet it on a stepped-up basis. And you can't say, I think it's a great program and we ought to pay for it. They don't run in the same sentence. If you have to begin, and we'll debate later, when do we immunize? When do we pay for immunizations? When should you pay for your own immunizations? We'll have that discussion in a bit. But I urge you to vote yes on this, because if you're not prepared to vote for this bill with the appropriation, then don't vote for it.
Thank you, Senator Nicholas. Senator Landon?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think you begin to get some of the picture of what our upcoming discussion is going to be all about. I appreciated the comments of the good appropriations chair. He's absolutely right. If we're going to talk about a program like this, it is going to cost money. And part of the reason that a bill was brought by yours truly was so that we could have this discussion, a good policy discussion with regard to our vaccination program. It is going to cost, I would say, you know, let's pass this amendment, then we can talk about the bill, and as the good senator said, then we can talk about whether we voted up or voted down. Thank you.
Thanks, Senator Landon. Ron, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, question, or Division 2, are ready for the question. All those in favor of Division 2 to Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 104, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The second division of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I yield to the sponsor of the bill for an explanation of it, Senator Landon.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I first became aware of this particular disease almost 10 years ago, when we lost a young lady from over in the good senator's part of the western part of the state. And I'm sure that many of you followed that story. She was a healthy young lady graduating out of Pinedale High School, went over to South Dakota to begin her college career, and shortly thereafter went on a volleyball trip up to North Dakota and never made it back to the university where she enrolled. She contracted bacterial meningitis, and something like 15 hours later, she was dead. Ever since I took up this issue, and believe me, I've been aware of it for the last 4 or 5 years in a different capacity, and that is in my day job. I pay attention to this age group all the time, which is very vulnerable to this infectious disease. Ever since I took this up and even visited with some local high school students up in central Wyoming about it, I've received all sorts of mail, and you can imagine it runs the gamut. But one that I got a couple of weeks ago said, Dear Senator Landon, please let me know if there's anything I can do to help Wyoming pass this bill. I spent 1 year of my life working here in Wisconsin to get a similar bill passed. I lost my 20-year-old son, Eddie Bailey, to bacterial meningitis. He was a student at the University of Wisconsin in Madison when the disease took his life in just 16 hours. He was a junior studying finance and economics and had been the valedictorian of his high school class. It's, of course, been the trial of my life. That's from a mom up in the northern part of our country. I have numerous letters like that. Well, that said, I could talk for a long time about what meningitis is. It's an infection that surrounds the fluid of the brain. It's one of the most feared infectious diseases that we have, Mr. Chairman. It could progress rapidly, as you've heard in those two examples. And particularly vulnerable are the age groups 11 to about 20 years old. Recent studies have indicated that the fatality rate can be anywhere from 10 to 40, 45%. If bacterial meningitis gets into the bloodstream, there's a 40% mortality rate. If it doesn't, and you get to it quickly enough, bacterial meningitis may take one of your limbs. It may render some of your internal organs useless. It's a very, very brutal disease, and it's one of the most feared diseases that we have. Does it happen often? No. In the United States, there will be about 3,000 cases of bacterial meningitis. There's probably going to be 5 or 6 in Wyoming. Let me just say that 38 states in the United States have addressed bacterial meningitis and talked about what do we do in terms of vaccinations with this disease. 11 states have already adopted a mandatory vaccination program for students entering college. I thought it was time that our state maybe have this policy discussion with regard to our vaccination program, Mr. Chairman. Do we include bacterial meningitis or don't we? The good chairman of appropriations is absolutely right. It's going to cost us some money to do that. When do we bring something on board in our vaccination program? I don't know that there's a scientific answer to that. Thank God we vaccinate now for smallpox, and we vaccinate for diphtheria, we vaccinate for mumps and measles, and, you know, I've got constituents back home, and I bet you do too, and they say we shouldn't be vaccinating against anything. I've got somebody back home who's a dear friend who is prepared not to really talk to me anymore because I've sponsored a bill like this. It shouldn't be up to me to tell her what to do with her kids. And I respect that. By the same token, we have a duty, I think, to public health. And so where does bacterial meningitis fold into that? Well, we've got one committee who thinks it's important that we have this discussion and passed it out of committee. We've got another committee whose job it is to pay attention to budget. And I understand that. And so you've got one committee that supports, you've got one committee that doesn't. And so I stand before you today to tell you that that's not really very surprising. This is a very difficult policy discussion. I happen to believe that it's worth doing. And the Department of Health does too. There's a National Advisory Committee for Immunization Practices. That folds underneath the Center for Disease Control out of Atlanta. They have recommended these past couple of years that bacterial meningitis vaccinations be done. That's a recommendation by the Center for Disease Control. The Department of Health likewise recommends that bacterial meningitis be vaccinated against. But as the chairman pointed out, they don't have the budget to do that. So therefore, they did not fold meningitis vaccinations underneath the mandatory program. The Department of Health has the authority to do that. This Senate has given the authority to the Department of Health to decide on our behalf what vaccinations we should be providing to our youth. And they do that. And there's 5 or 6 or 7 different mandatory vaccines for all of us who have had kids or grandkids or brothers or sisters go through. We know that you have to have some mandatory vaccinations. So it's been recommended by the Center for Disease Control. It's recommended by our Department of Health. They don't have the money to do it. So I think it's very appropriate that we talk about that today. Their idea in the Department of Health is that after visiting about this issue in the Labor and Health Committee meeting, we recommended perhaps at the 7th grade level. The Department of Health thinks maybe a little bit later. Perhaps we do this for our 17-year-olds so that when they do, like our young lady from Pinedale, go off into the world to go off to school somewhere, maybe a school that doesn't require it, that they're protected. I think it's worth the visit. Thank you. I would stand for any questions.
Thanks, Senator Landon. Senator Nicholas. Oh, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman. We've been criticized some, the legislature. We've been spending a fair amount of time and effort on opposition to some of the national reform efforts, on putting some bounds on where health reform should go. We've been spending, there's been a fair amount of discussion of that in the public press. We are also trying, as we have over the years, Mr. Chairman, in this legislature, to do some positive things to improve the health of the citizens of Wyoming. And I think this is the one of the first of these to hit the floor this year. This brings a tough decision to the legislature. You've seen the cost. It's in the standing committee amendment. And as the chairman of the Appropriations Committee points out, that's only for 1 year, the biennium. And the biennium's got 2 years, so you've got to double that going forward. And that's the real cost. And what you buy for that, based on the testimony in committee, is the current vaccination rate in the appropriate age group is in the 40-plus percent range. You go to 80-plus percent. And those are rough figures, but that's what we can expect given the experience in other states. You figure that on the number of cases that we have, you're probably going to save a couple of lives a year of children, young adults that are just reaching the prime of life. The good years. You're going to save some others from surviving but having crippling effects from this disease. And it's a disease that can move very rapidly. The cost, now you're looking at $335,000 a year. What's it worth to you? What kind of value do you put on human life? What kind of value do you put on preventive health? That's the question before you. This state is wealthy. This state can afford some things. There are limits to what we can afford. The question is this kind of preventive effort something we can afford, or do we think human life is not worth that many dollars? It's not a simple question, fellow senators, but that's the question before you.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Go to Senator Nicholas and then over to Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to talk about the reasons why we recommended against this bill. There are a variety of reasons why, even if you wanted to engage in this program, you wouldn't do it in this fashion. But before I begin there, I do want to talk about the issues with respect to health issues. And all of the members, the new members, you're going to be called upon and challenged in the legislature to do things where you're called upon to examine what you think the value of life is. And let me tell you this. I don't think you're any different than I am. You cannot put value on life. And if you've had almost everybody here, I'm sure, has lost a loved one, lost children, lost mothers, fathers, friends to cancer, loved ones to cancer, and you can't put a value on that. You simply can't. And if you believe that it's our job to save every person and save every life, we should begin by requiring mandatory seatbelts. We should have tripled the fine. We should take all alcohol out, all drugs away. And there's a number of things. And in fact, there are things that are riskier than bacterial meningitis that you could put money in tomorrow and save more lives, and you could put a quantity on it immediately. And you'll be called, and right now, there are transplants. There are more people dying of organ failures than will die of this, and you could put in another $500,000 for every person that finds themselves in a position that they need a transplant and they can't afford it. There are people in the hospital today that may be making health care choices that if the state were going to say, here's an unlimited amount of money, and you can go down to a specialty hospital in Houston because we think there's better care on there, and we'll pay for that. And unfortunately, as it works out, and as many things in this world, there are things that government should do and some things that it shouldn't do. Now, I'm familiar with bacterial meningitis. And it, by the way, it is not the most notorious disease. If you think that, you've never seen people with smallpox, with pertussis, whooping cough. What we have in, with respect to bacterial meningitis, there are particular risk groups that should be getting the shot. And the most obvious risk groups are young adults going into college and going into a dormitory setting. And the University of Wyoming, if they choose tomorrow to say it's mandatory to get one of these shots before you come to college, have at it. I have four children, and when we sent them off to college, they got these shots. Because we had read about some of the things that my colleague from Casper has talked about, and we didn't want to have to experience that. And there's a lot of literature out there, and I believe that when you go to the college, if you go in the dormitories, they send you a letter and say, you should do it. Now, if the university chooses not to require it, that's because they've gone through their own analysis. And if you want to bring a bill to require the community colleges and UW to require as a condition of enrollment that they all have this shot, have at it. And I submit to you, if you can afford to go to college, you can afford to pay for an $80 shot. A lot of these kids can afford to do a lot of things. They can go out on weekends. They can do benders. They can do things. They can afford a shot for these things. Now, let's talk about this program. The program that we have, and if you take a look at page 2 and 3 of your bill, you'll notice that in Romanette 3 on the top, there's no list of pertussis, whooping cough, diphtheria, smallpox. It's not there. You won't see the list there. Because what we've done is we've assigned the Department of the Health to go out and identify certain mandatory vaccines that need to be given, that must be given for the health of the entire community. You don't want smallpox across the street because you're going to get it. You don't want pertussis across the street. So we mandate that we first assigned it to the Department of Health and said, you figure out what these shots are that you just have to have as to prevent these pandemic types of diseases. And they've identified it in rules and regulations. And they've determined that bacterial meningitis is not one of those things that you're going to see a pandemic and epidemic in it. Now, for those diseases, and so then they've got a separate set of rules. Now, for those diseases that we call this, we have a mandatory vaccine program, we pay for the vaccines. The state does. And they're expensive. So as I described before, your children go in when they're 3 or 4 years old, they get a shot, they don't pay for the vaccine, they pay for the cost of administering the vaccine. And we've determined which those are, the Department of Health has determined which those are. And the Department of Health determined that this is not one of those drugs. So what we're saying here on page 2 is we list now one drug or one vaccine, excuse me, to be added to, which shall include. So we're saying we don't agree with the Department of Health's judgment. This should have been on the list. And I suppose we could start, and there are a lot of other vaccines. If your children happen to go to some places in Africa, we should put in yellow fever. And there's a whole other group of items that we should require everybody to have just in case they go to travel abroad. And we all want our children to travel abroad. So the issue here is not whether we should require this to go into college. The issue is are we going to countermand, second guess the list that's provided by the Department of Health and then require this? And we submit to you that this is not one of those diseases that has reached the epidemic, pandemic-type exposure that belongs in that list where we're going to pay for the vaccines. And if my colleague believes that it's appropriate to do so, then require that anybody that goes to college have it before they go to college. Fair enough. There are risk groups out there that really should do it. But this doesn't warrant that list. And if you say, well, one every 4 or 5 years we see this happen to one person, we'll give you a list of a whole list of other things of the same category of risk. And I'm not saying, again, that it's not a good idea to have these vaccines. It is. But it doesn't belong on this list, where we require everybody to get vaccinated, and it is one that the risk groups that are exposed to it can afford to get their shots themselves, and they should. Thank you.
Thanks, Senator Nicholas. Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is just a question because, one, I tend to be one who favors, you know, vaccination and have my children vaccinated and so forth. But we all know, I mean, when we talk about balancing, the cost of life and whatnot, we all know that there are adverse reactions also to vaccinations. And we already know that there are huge amounts of money that have been set aside in funds to compensate for those adverse problems that have occurred with vaccinations. And I'm not sure, when I'm making this decision here today, what are the are there or are there not? Any adverse reactions to this vaccination? And then, of course, I question the timing as to, you know, whether or not we should be doing this now. Certainly, it's a general session. Anything can come up. But when you don't really see, and I appreciate the chairman of appropriations in terms of letting us know what the real cost of it is, because if it comes up in the budget session, it will have a whole different feeling to us at that time when you look at that cost and you start weighing out where we are in a year from now. So those are my questions, and hopefully somebody can answer those.
Thanks, Senator Ross. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, a little bit about the adverse reactions. That question was asked and answered by the head of the Department of Health, and they're normal adverse reactions that anybody may have to a vaccine. A lot of these vaccines are made in eggs or different things like that, and if you're allergic to those, then you would be allergic to this vaccine. And there are exemptions, categories in there that it's not a mandatory vaccination for you. In that case, that's you've had allergic reactions to other vaccines, so you don't have to take it. There's also religious exemptions and other exemptions that you don't have to take those vaccines. As far as the real cost of this, one of the things that's out there that hasn't been determined yet is whether or not this shot requires a booster. There's some study that's going on, and it may indeed, to get full coverage, it may be found out that you have to have a booster in 5 years. And if that's the case, to get the coverage of the intention of the sponsor, then these costs would actually double. But that's something I can't say it will happen. All I can say is that it's under study to find out whether or not it does require a booster. We did have some discussion about the other diseases that are out there that had been basically recommended by the advisory committee for vaccines. Although this might be on that recommended list, as the sponsor did suggest, it's not on the short list. And so we asked the director from the Department of Health, if we just gave you money, you know, in this program, would this be the disease that you would recommend that we would vaccinate for? And he frankly said no. So, and they go through a scientific analysis based on the effects of all the diseases that are out there that can be vaccinated for. They look at the mortality rates. They look at the entire effect of what that positive effect of what a vaccine vaccination program would bring. And this disease has not raised to that level, as the chairman of appropriation has said, has not raised to that level that it would be funded if funds were available under this program. So, you know, the question really is that are we going to make a policy decision to set a priority outside of the best management practices and the best science available that the department has within their area of expertise? And so that's really the question.
Thanks, Senator Meyer. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, several points. One stray point, because several speakers have mentioned it. Smallpox is no longer vaccinated for. The disease has been eradicated from the world, one of the great triumphs of international public health. So it's you just don't do that anymore. There's no chance that the disease will be around unless some terrorist somewhere is a source of the virus. So that's a detail. I mention it because it's come up several times. The testimony we had in front of Committee 10 was that the reason this was not on the mandatory list was not that they wouldn't recommend it, but they did not have the budget for it. So if you're going to do it, you've got to put the budget. And that throws the decision back to the legislature, Mr. Chairman, where I think it belongs in this case. It's one they recommend. It's expensive. It costs a fair amount in terms of for each life saved. And it's our judgment, our duty to make that judgment. Is it worth it? And I'll warn you, in the health area, I can remember in the old days there was a Dr. Cohen who used to be head of the health department. And he would go to the Appropriations Committee and he would tell them, whatever money you got left over, give it to me and I'll make good use of it. I'll help people. I'll save lives. And there really was no end point on that request. And that's the truth of the matter, fellow senators. And so you come to the question, you've got a specific question here in front of you. It won't save a lot of lives. It will save some. If there's five or six cases a year in this state, you're probably going to save a life or two every year. You're probably going to save somebody from going through life crippled from the disease. Is it worth $335,000 a year, twice that for a biennial? That's the question before you. I urge you to vote on it.
Thanks, Senator Scott. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I strongly disagree with the senator from Natrona County. This should not be our choice. This is a matter of science, this is a matter of epidemiology, and this is a matter of public health. We pay people, we train people, we select people to make these decisions for us, which is the reason that we don't have a laundry list of what we're trying to fund right now in our legislation, and this is the first exception to that. The reason we don't is because there are statistical analyses, Mr. Chairman, that tell us where our money is best placed when we're spending it on public health. And this is a situation where I'm going to get my kids a meningococcal vaccination when they're 11 years old. I will get them a booster when they're 16 years old, and I'll make sure they have it before they go to college. But that's my personal choice. When we're looking at public health, if we were to give $335,000 additional dollars per year to public health, I highly doubt they're going to spend it on meningococcal vaccinations. But if we do want to increase that budget, I think that's reasonable. I'm a big advocate of public health, and I'm a big advocate of making sure that we have these vaccinations in place. But I'm not an advocate for the language that is on page 2, lines 6 and 7, where we specifically say what our state health officer is going to do. We have one carve-out. We let them make all the rest of the choices in terms of public health, but on this one occasion, we, as a legislature, are going to tell a scientific community how they are going to spend their funds. We're going to give them $335,000, and we're going to tell them what to spend it on, because this time, just this time, we know better than the people who have spent their entire lives studying epidemiology to determine where our funds are best spent to protect the lives of our people, Mr. Chairman. I'm against this bill. I love the intention. I'm very concerned about meningococcus and this type of disease, but this is not how we want to be legislating, and we do not want to be telling the scientific community and the medical community how they should spend and prioritize their funding, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Rothfuss. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate all of my fellow senators' many good points brought up, and specifically to the good senator from Albany County, very good points. And your kids are very, very fortunate to have a parent who, first of all, support the idea that they should be vaccinated. Second of all, have the administrative fee to be paid. And then third, choose to do it. A lot of kids out there don't have that. With respect to the good senator in the back of the room, I was at the committee meeting when the Department of Health spokesman said that there were two things that he would prioritize if we had the money for it. One was flu, one was meningitis. So to say that they would not prioritize it and would not pay for this is not correct. That is not correct. That was the testimony at two different committee meetings. How real is this threat to meningitis? Well, I already said that we're not going to have a lot of cases, but south of the border, barely 50, 60 miles away, five people have died in the last year from bacterial meningitis. So it's a very real threat out there. With regard to should we vaccinate if our kids are going to travel to Africa, and should we vaccinate against yellow fever? Well, That's not a disease that's being recommended by the Center for Disease Control. That's not a disease recommended by our Department of Health. With regard to the other comments made by the senator from Albany County, we're not telling the Department of Health anything that they haven't already recommended to us. They've recommended that we vaccinate against meningitis. What we're doing is saying, okay, in our statutes, we're going to say we are going to include meningitis because the Department of Health told us that. And if we hadn't brought it in bill form, we wouldn't have the opportunity to discuss this way. We could stand up on a budget amendment and say, fellow senators, I think we ought to add $300,000 and vaccinate for something else. And that would be a brief little conversation that we would have, and the appropriation chairman would stand against, and we would vote it down, more than likely. But at least we've had the opportunity today, fellow senators, after a couple of visits in two of our best committees, and we've been able to bring this out here so that we can elevate the discussion on vaccination. And, you know, you probably read where some high school students in Central Wyoming are very supportive of this, because this disease scares our young people. And our teenagers out there did request that we take a look at this, and I think it's appropriate. I think it's a good bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Landon. Senator Nicholas.
Jim, I want to address one last thing before we vote on this, and that's this. Folks, as we sit here making recommendations to you from Appropriations Committee, you're going to see a bill, and you're going to see that we have made a recommendation for millions of dollars of more spending in the Department of Health. Millions. You're going to see that. And when the Department of Health comes to the JAC, they, and this is true for every agency, they make what's called exception requests for additional money. Now, these exception requests may go from 1 to 30 or 1 to 70, and we require that they prioritize their requests. And we generally try to fund, if we are going to provide funding, we examine their priorities to make sure that they properly prioritize. Because we know that there are agencies that will game the system. They put what they their last priority on the first, knowing that there will be a lot of support for the first priority and hope that they can get their last priority funding, and then the floor will come and put more money into it. And those things happen, and you're here to help us to see if that happens and make mistakes. We reexamine. But by and large, agencies are pretty truthful. They come in and they actually say, here are our top priorities. Now, I'm not saying that legislators can't say, hey, they missed something out there, but you're going to see that we did fund some of their top priorities. This was not among them. Not even close. Not even close. And my colleague from Natrona County, the taller senator, is absolutely right. The Department of Health will support every request you make to provide for health care in the state because they're advocates for health care. And if you're surprised to see that it's unlikely that if you go to the Department of Health and say, I've got an idea, would you support it, that they'll say no. In every case, as long as it's for the health, they'll say, if you can put the money in, all the money, we'll put it to good use, and we will provide for the health. So don't be surprised that the Department of Health says, yeah, we'll take whatever you can give us, and we'll provide for the health care. Whether you like it or not, you have to draw lines. You're going to have to decide, are you going to provide for all the health care, and are you going to be the parent to every child, every family out there? And if that's what you came down here to do, that's great. Let's open up our wallets. And you can do it. And unfortunately, I guess, as much as I would love to provide universal health care to everybody, I also believe that's not the government's job. And in this case, this is a vaccination that parents ought to be informed of, and they can make the choice whether their children are going to be in that risk group that are going to be exposed to this, and they ought to pay for it, and they ought to do it. But we didn't believe while it might be nice to have the government do it, it is not the highest priority for our health care dollars. And we urge you to vote no on the bill.
Thank you. Senator Bernard.
Mr. Chairman, I have some questions about this, not speaking for or against the bill. I wondered what is the average cost for an individual to have this meningitis shot? Do they need it two or three times in their lifetime? I wonder if we could answer the question of, are these shots covered by a person's health insurance, and if that can be happened? I would think if it's that important that maybe many of the health insurance programs we have would pay for this. And I wondered I think we already addressed that one. So I would just ask these questions and see if there would be some way that we could have this done on a private matter. And then if a person does not have the insurance to cover it, then it might be, I would think it may be more appropriate to have the state pay for it.
Thank you, Senator Byrne. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Cost the state $79, and yes and yes. Oh, I think, Senator
Landon. Oh, you're still going.
Senator, the state of Wyoming can obtain these vaccines for about $79. Will it stay there? No. No. The vaccination program will continue to cost us more money as we go along. Private insurance comes into play. But essentially, that's what it costs the state, is $79 a shot. And a lot of great points made, Mr. Chairman. I would call for question on the bill.
Thanks, Senator Landon. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise report, they do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 104 or 104, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Division. Having been called for, all those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. Senate File 104, having failed the roll call vote pursuant to Senate Rule 11-5A. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm ahead of the game. Thank you, Senator Scott. Let's take the roll. The chief clerk will call the pursuant to Senate Rule 11-5, having failed the standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
No.
Burns.
No.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
No.
Cooper.
Dockstader, no.
Driscoll,
no.
Emmerich,
no.
Esquivel,
aye.
Geis,
no.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
no.
Jennings,
no.
Johnson,
no.
Landon,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Meyer,
no.
Nicholas,
no.
Nutting,
no.
Perkins,
no.
Peterson,
no.
Ross,
no.
Rothfuss, Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
no.
President Anderson,
no.
Closing vote, Christensen, aye to no. Closing vote, closing vote closed. 8 ayes, 22 noes.
Thank you. Now, Senate File 104, having failed the roll call vote pursuant to Senate Rule 11-5A, is deemed indefinitely postponed. Senator Christensen. Senator Christensen, the floor is yours.
Mr. President, members of the Senate, this is what we came down for, was to wrestle with these tough issues. If I could... On a related note, but on an upbeat, if I could introduce Wyoming's outstanding child care providers for 2010. This is the third year that Wyoming's PBS has recognized the importance of quality child care by selecting and celebrating outstanding licensed child care providers in Wyoming. The 2010 outstanding child care providers are with us today. If we could take a look upstairs, I'd like to introduce them, Veronica Pruzzanini, Laura Stedfelt, and Kim Sweet are from Jackson, Casper, and Powell, and they've been able to witness what we do today, and we're appreciative of their good work, too.
Thank you, Senator Christensen. We hope you enjoy your day at the Capitol. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
Heard the motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carried.
Mr. President.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr.
President, I move that the Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m.
Any announcements? Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, will meet 15 minutes after the noon recess today, Wednesday, in room S18 to consider the following bill. Senate File 105, State Control of Certain Land, House Bill 108, Engrossed Collection Agencies, and House Bill 112, Engrossed Mining Permits.
Other announcements? Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, earlier I announced that your Transportation Committee was going to meet 10 minutes after adjournment today, the 2nd of February, and take up House Bill 41, Engrossed, driving within a single lane. Due to circumstances beyond our control, we're going to have to postpone that bill once again, but we'll take it up sometime in the future.
Senator Case.
Your committee number 7, Corporations, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in room S19. We've got our last Senate File 154, Plumber Licensing. And then we're going to move into House Land, and that we have House Bill 3, Engrossed Liquor License Transfers, and House Bill 98, Bar and Grill Liquor Licenses.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, we'll meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. up in S14, where we will take up House Bill 31, Engrossed, Parametro Regulation, House Bill 101, Engrossed, Vicious Animals, Interference with Game Wardens, House Bill 133, Engrossed, Special Limited Fishing Permits, and House Bill 37, State Archives Storage Study.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Committee and Number 2, Appropriations, is going to meet at 1 p.m., and then we'll work through the lunch and then on adjournment to consider and continue to work on the following bill: Senate File 125, Healthcare Facilities Crisis Management, Senate File 139, Healthcare Pilot Project Amendments, Senate File 121, Performance Federal Natural Resource Policy. Mr. President, if I may have a privilege of the floor for a moment.
You may.
Thank you. Folks, you've got on your table the 2011 budget fiscal data book. What the Appropriations Committee generally does is, as we go through the appropriation process, we keep a list of things that we think that were important to us to know, and then hopeful that if we put them together in a book, then they'll be a help to you. This is the book that is the result of that effort. So if you begin to look through it, you're going to see a variety of tabs. One of the tabs that I commend to you to begin maybe just looking at is, if you look at the revenue flow charts, you're going to start seeing the spaghetti charts. And they're the kinds of things that if you have the opportunity just to look at them a little bit and see them before we begin talking about the budget, they'll give you some, it'll make your conversation go a little easier as we go through there. We'll slow down on the budget as we get closer. I mean, it's always, we don't always run the budget during the session. Typically, JAC meets before the session. We have a budget bill prepared, and then we can begin immediately talking about the budgets and the effects. Because we had such great turnover in our committees, the chairman has decided to run the budget with the new committees during the session. So that's one of the reasons why we've been burning the candles at both ends to get this budget ready. The budget's going to be pretty well completed in the next couple days. It'll be out, and then we'll start going to the goldenrods. I've not talked about the goldenrods yet because they haven't shaped up yet. They're still in flux until we get these last votes taken and the budget out. There are things in here, for example, with respect to local governments. We have a chart there that shows what our level of support has been for local governments, going clear back to the pre-de-earmarking days, and you can look at that and get a feel for our level of support for local governments. There are a variety of things that are just helpful to you. And I know, while I don't expect that you would sit down and read them and understand them, they're there. We'll, on time to time, we'll refer to them. You might keep it handy at your desk as we go through the budget. But, Mr. President, as soon as we get the bill out, then we'll be requesting you for time to go through the goldenrod, to explain it. It'd be nice to have that in front of you before we have some of these big budget items. that are going to come up on bills, but we'll bring you up to speed, and I hope you enjoy the process, because the budget is a fun process. Thank you.
Other announcements? Seeing none, you've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries. The Senate shall stand recessed until 2 p.m. this afternoon. Till 2 p.m.